Hey, good evening. Thanks so much for being here. Julie Nowinski-Kontiak, and we're going to talk about connecting the dots for patients and systems, exploring a clinical community linkage to address the social determinants of health. No relationships to disclose. So through discussing a story about planning and implementation, we're going to be able to describe reasons why a healthcare delivery system would want to explore such a partnership, demonstrate a strategy to explore a partnership, and identify what I would consider some essential elements to a partnership to address the social determinants of health. So a little foreshadowing, I just want you to keep this in the back of your mind as we go through this story. Planning and flexibility. So as public health folks, we love to plan. Policy and planning is one of the 10 essential public health services, as we all know. But in the words of Albert Einstein, the measure of intelligence is the ability to change. And this can sometimes feel a bit like a tug of war, and I think you're going to see that theme a bit here. So I know this audience doesn't need a lecture on the social determinants of health, but we'll just review the WHO definition, that these are the conditions in which people are born, grow, work, live, and age, and the wider set of forces and systems shaping the conditions of daily life. And if you prefer visuals, on the bottom we have from the CDC a framework for thinking about the relationship between these four constructs and the influence that society has on individual health. Okay, we're going to dive into the story in a second, but first I just want to look at a little data. So you may recognize this type of map. This is for those who are not local, this is a map of the city of Chicago. Here, to give a little orientation, kind of downtown is over here. O'Hare's up here, if you flew in over here. And this is courtesy of the Chicago Department of Public Health. And you may have heard Dr. Pershawn and his team talk about some of this work at another session. But they did this interesting thing. They mapped out what's called the Hardship Index. And this is an index, a composite measure of six social factors, first, I think, put out by the Rockefeller Institute about a decade ago. It looks at six factors, unemployment, poverty, housing, dependency, a couple others. And in this map, we can see that the dark green is where they found high hardship index indices. And you can see it's not evenly distributed throughout the city. In fact, lots of our EPI maps in Chicago look strikingly similar to this with poor outcomes of what we're looking at on the south and the west side. And what was interesting is that the health department found that these were strongly correlated with poor health outcomes. I listed a couple of them here, for example, teen birth rates and homicide rates. So this is data about what we're talking about. But to put a personal story on it, we're going to bring you to Fantas Health Center, which is that one of the outpatient clinics affiliated with the Cook County Health and Hospital System, where I'm in training. And that is about, let's see if I have it right, probably right around here. It's a safety net clinic. You know, before Medicaid expansion, I would say most of the patients were uninsured, an adult population, multiple chronic comorbidities. And I'll tell you about one of my visits that started this all off. So I was in clinic with Dr. Shin, who's here in the office, in the audience, seeing a follow-up patient, a 48-year-old woman. Actually, for a second, before we jump to that, I'll just orient you to this cartoon because it's kind of hard to read. So the patient being, very thoroughly examined by their doctor, stethoscope, checking the pulse, and the patient saying, "Let me know if you want to know why I'm here." So I think this cartoon speaks to the social, the upstream determinants of what brings our patients, causes our patients illness, as well as some of the disconnect sometimes between priorities of providers and patients. So my patient and I have the good fortune in this visit of spending some time on her smoking. And so we, as a good preventive medicine physician, I was armed with my cessation worksheet, my referral to the quit line, my evidence about medicines to help her quit her smoking. But then she threw me a curveball. We started to think about why she smokes and, better. I'm not leaning over with my pregnant belly on the computer screen. So we started to talk about why she smoked. And, she smoked when she was at home, and she really didn't like being home alone. She tried to get out and about, but she was unemployed and she was having a really hard time finding gainful employment because of some transportation issues she had, as well as a criminal record. And so suddenly that toolbox I had felt very inadequate to meet her needs. And you know, not only did my tools feel inadequate, but you know, in a normal clinic setting, I would have been limited by time to really delve into these sort of social circumstances, and there would have been some challenges and priorities. So Dr. Shin and I started to talk about how we can help this patient who has a lot of needs. Should the healthcare delivery system is that the right place to address these? And do we need to build capacity internally, or can we partner with others who are already doing this? Those are some of the questions we started to explore. And so we decided partnership was the route to go. So I bring you to LIPS. This is a national organization. Some of you may be familiar with them. They're an anti-poverty nonprofit. They have a presence in LA, DC, New York, and Chicago right now. And their mission is to literally lift people out of poverty by addressing their social needs, whether that be housing, employment, public benefits, or other things. Their model is, you know, they have a limited staff who's greatly supported by advocates who are largely volunteers, including AmeriCorps, you know, long-term volunteers. And these advocates serve members, which is, you know, what Dr. Shim and I in the clinic would call our patients, but anyone in the public, it's free and open to all. I think this piece from a New York Times editorial nicely describes their approach. So LIFT approach is grounded in the principle that change happens through relationships. If this sounds soft, it isn't. LIFT has spent more than a decade systematizing what amounts to a social technology. So, you know, we were drawn to, there are many nonprofit organizations, many entities that are involved in helping individuals address their social needs. We were particularly drawn to this personal model that LIFT uses to work very intensely one-on-one with patients, which is something that we knew that I certainly couldn't offer in the clinic. And truly, you know, the health system, even including all of my colleagues, you know, we didn't have the capacity to do in such an intense way. So we decided to approach LIFT. And so back in January, I emailed LIFT, cold emailed them, just to find out if they ever partnered with healthcare organizations in this way, and regardless, would they be interested in doing it? We were happy to see that they replied that no, they haven't done it before, but they would love to explore that with us. So we started to have some, you know, get to know you meetings, and in March we had a kickoff meeting. It was a roundtable on a social determinants that involved participants from the health system, as well as LIFT, the nonprofit, as well as our two local health departments. So it was really important at this meeting we had, from the health system, we had the individuals, frontline providers, MDs, as well as social workers, as well as administration, both on the social worker side, integrated care side. We have representatives from County Care, which is one of the Illinois Medicaid managed care organizations, and it's part of county, actually, as well as policy. And then we were really thrilled to have our two local health departments there who were able to provide their lens and their expertise on this, including sharing some data. So for the next couple months, we made some progress. We'll quickly talk about that. We kicked off a referral process. So we incorporated a paper referral process from our clinic to their clinic, you could call it. We explored making this electronic. We started with just a really small pilot with a couple of providers and some training of the social workers in the outpatient primary care clinics. We secured bus fare for County Care patients so that they could get to their LIFT appointments. We helped provide some public health expertise, such as where to get flu shots, how to deal with bed bugs, things that LIFT commonly saw that they just weren't quite sure about. And then we, you know, thought as a system, well, wow, if we really were going to do this seriously, we'd really have to start screening seriously across the whole system for social determinants and, you know, what are the tools that are already out there, what are best practices. We surveyed social workers to find out what some barriers to using such a, you know, to using Lyft as a specialty that they refer to when, you know, what are the problems with that. And then we explore the idea of having Lyft be on site on a limited basis. So we, you know, with anything, there's always some challenges. We hit a couple barriers to implementation. You know, Cook County is a large entity, so there's some bureaucracy and some silos to deal with, and that can always be challenging, especially with competing priorities and understaffed departments. Lyft's only location in Chicago at the time was in Uptown, which I didn't point out on that map, but it's kind of several miles north of Chicago, or downtown rather, sorry, and not in an area where a lot of our patients came from, so just them physically getting to Lyft was a challenge. We encountered tons of red tape to explore the idea of co-location. It was going to take about 6 months to make that happen, and when their AmeriCorps volunteers were only there for a year, that clearly isn't going to work. And then in July came our biggest barrier. Lyft leadership called me in early July and gave me the heads up that Lyft was going to actually be suspending operations in Chicago, and they were going to be announcing that a couple of days later. But that it was for a 12-month rebuild with strategic partners, and that they were going to be moving to this two-generation model to end the cycle of poverty for families. And in fact, Chicago was going to serve as a national pilot once they reopened, and you know, they wanted to make sure we understand that they were committed to this partnership. So at this point, you know, we had a couple of, it was a fork in the road. We could, you know, what were our options? We could, you know, say thanks but no thanks and kind of walk away. We gave it a try. We could look for a different partner, or we could, you know, recalibrate our partnership and maybe deal with a little short-term pain for hopefully a good things in the long term. So that's where we decided to go. So the partnership since July has really shifted from operations and actually, you know, processing those referrals, logistics, to more strategic partner at the moment. So for example, Lyft is trying to figure out where they're going to open, where in Chicago are they going to open their new location in next July. And we're able to, through our health departments and through some of our own data, it helped inform that decision of where they, you know, could get, you know, the most bang for their buck in terms of where the main patients are that they need to be serving. We have brought to their attention some additional partners, for example, the Women, Infant, Children, the WIC programs. That certainly is a venue that might be good for them to recruit for their purposes. And so, in terms of long-term effects, you know, our hope is that, and I believe this, that we shifted gears, but that it's going to end up being a positive thing in the long run. But with a little caveat on the bottom that, you know, their change of focusing on the generation model is going to limit, it's only applicable now to a subset of our population, and that's fine, but we have to recognize that. So I don't know how well this cartoon projects, but it's three silos. The first is an HR department, and it says, sorry, not this department's responsibility. The middle one wouldn't have a clue, try another division. And so you get the point. I think we all, many of us, deal with silos in our where we work. And so an unintended consequence of this whole partnership is that there's better internal coordination. The preventive medicine section, which I'm part of, Dr. Shim, is a leader in, now has a really nice working relationship dialogue with the leadership from social services and social work, and we recognize that we, you know, we want the same thing for our patients, and we need to work together and be a force to push for change in the system. And so we have regular meetings now. We've hosted other institutions, for example, University of Illinois, to figure out how they address these issues. And we've looked at other solutions. You know, we knew Lyft was never going to be the end-all, be-all, only thing that our patients needed to address their social determinants. And so it's pushed us to, you know, move to other areas. So in the last maybe 30 seconds, I will just talk about some lessons learned. So, you know, I think if you are exploring this type of partnership in your entity, you know, you need to build on a foundation of that sort of tug-of-war planning, but be flexible, and transparency with your external partners, and that transparency is going to build trust. You know, you're working with an external partner, so you're going to have less control, and that's just a reality, and so act accordingly.
Remember, when you're initially proposing such a partnership, you have to, you're not only messaging externally, you're messaging internally. Find out who the key players are and make sure that you're getting a message to them. Don't reinvent the wheel. Look to see who else in your area is already working on this. For example, your local health department would be a good place to start. Remember, it needs to be a win-win situation for everyone, so make sure you're making the business case. As you implement, constant follow-through and contact, and make sure everyone's on the same page in terms of concrete goals, and reevaluate and adjust accordingly. And from day one, measure and have an evaluation plan so that you know what success looks like. And in terms of not reinventing the wheel, these are just some of the organizations. It's definitely not an exhaustive list, and that have put out lots of resources on working on social determinants of health and partnerships. And so I encourage you to check out what they have to offer. They have a lot to offer. And in closing, thank you to all of you for your attention, to my collaborators, Dr. Shim and Dr. Bodhar, both in the audience, and Mr. Anderson from Lyft.